Live from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
Our guest is looking at you like right now going, that's not how you do it.
It's kind of fun playing air piano when there's an actual pianist here.
Pianist, I know. That sounds so formal, doesn't it?
Pianist. Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. Oh, my goodness. Look at all these nice people here. Hello. My name is Scott.
And my name is Hino. Thanks so much for tuning in tonight and for waving at us through the window. We love that. This show is for all you songwriters and musicians and performers out there who are just trying to get a handle on things here in Music City and just figure stuff out.
That's right. Now, remember, we don't know anything. We're out there slinging songs during the day just like you guys are. But we are able to bring brilliant, smart, talented people in and ask them questions and give you the opportunity to get online and join in the conversation.
That's true. And you can do that a couple of ways. You can go to facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow. You can hit us up on Twitter at The Music Row Show, or you could even just do it the old-fashioned way and email us at mail@TheMusicRowShow.com. Either way, you can chime in with your questions and comments.
You kind of sound like Jack Nicholson there for a minute. Either way, I don't care what you do.
Yeah, that's exactly what I just said.
Yeah,
like.
You did. Exactly. Very, very Jack Nicholson. I'd prefer you just say thank you. We got a good show tonight.
We do. We've got hit songwriter Pete Wasner joining us here in the first hour.
That's right. And then after that, we have, he's a multiple Grammy Award-winning hit songwriter, producer, multi-instrumentalist Carl Jackson. In hour two.
That's awesome. Can't wait to do that. But right now, why don't you introduce the guest we got sitting here right now?
I'll do that. Tonight's guest has written big old hits with and for Vince Gill. He's written for Garth Brooks, Hal Ketchum, Trisha Yearwood, just to name a few. He and Vince co-wrote one of my all-time, bar none, favorite country songs, Whenever You Come Around. Love that song.
Oh.
Love that.
I thought it was Achy Breaky. No?
No, that's not one of my favorite songs. But I have nothing against that song.
Nothing wrong with that.
He's also toured the world playing pianos, keyboards with some of the biggest names in country music. And he brought his daughter here,
nice.
Mackenzie. And
a little backup singing going on there.
You never know.
I think
you never know. We're going to have some fun. It's a pleasure to say, Pete Wasner, thank you so much for being here. And welcome to the Music Row Show.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's going to be fun.
Listen to that crowd. Wow. You hear that?
Yeah.
They're still standing.
They're still out there, standing room only. So I was just curious, how many years of lessons did you suffer through growing up of piano lessons? And what did they have to do to make you practice?
I was lucky with the lessons. My mom played piano, taught me how to play, and then I took lessons, and I would just, the teacher would play me the song, and then I would just remember it.
Yeah.
I kind of learned how to read. And then at one point, I think it was the John Thompson third grade book. It got a little harder, and she went, "You're not really reading." Yeah. Sorry, no, I quit.
That's exactly what happened to me too. I can't,
But I did teach my mom how to read a little bit because she didn't know how to read, and it was fun. It was a good experience. But I just I wanted to play songs,
right,
and I learned some little bit of technique, but.
All that theory just kind of slows you down.
That's right.
You're trying to be a rock star.
Well, so then how did you progress at the piano then?
I'm mostly self-taught, really.
Mm-hmm.
I knew how to I played trombone and a baritone in fifth and sixth grade. Had a great music teacher and was in choir, so I could still read notes.
You knew what going up and,
Yes, and especially when you have a section, it was great because even if you couldn't read, you could just kind of latch on to the next guy. And there's strength in numbers. And but then I went to, I thought I was going to be a dentist, so I graduated from high school and went to the University of Minnesota as a pre-dentist, major pre-dentistry. And that lasted about 2 weeks, and I realized I would just take incompletes, and I found out about this a music school in Boston, Berklee College of Music.
Yeah,
I got a job on a revolving stage for 9 months in Minneapolis at this bar called Duffy's. And
did it ever stop? I mean, did you get a night off, or you just were on that stage?
Six nights a week. Yeah, it felt like it. The day
9 months.
Just
a lot of Dramamine.
Yeah. So then I went there, and that was really the first time I had any formal theory or piano lessons or anything.
Was that Berkeley?
Yeah, and I just went there for a year, but it was I learned a lot.
So what does your family say going from dentistry school, going to a college to be a dentist, to, I'm going to play piano?
I think they were wondering what I was thinking, being a dentist, you know. What? They
didn't
say anything,
okay. Not the other way around.
Right.
Oh, well, good.
No, they were cool. Nobody ever pushed me to do anything.
That's good. Were they musical themselves?
Yeah, everybody in my family is musical, but I grew up in Minnesota, and there was no way to make a living in Minnesota, you know, so nobody thought there was a way anywhere.
Right.
I figured there must be a way somehow, so I just kind of kept following the fork in the road and ended up in Nashville.
Wow.
So what were the deciding factors in moving to Nashville? I mean, what were your assumptions about the community and then the reality once you got here?
Well, if you would have told me that you're going to move to Nashville someday and write country songs, I would have said you were crazy. But I was living in California, in Los Angeles, and I had met Vince Gill many years ago. And he moved out here, and he was bringing me out to do TV shows and stuff. And I still was thinking, Nashville, I mean, but the more I came here, the more I really liked it. And it's the best thing I ever did when I moved here.
So then it's safe to say country music wasn't a big part of your upbringing in terms of...
Well, it was always there. I mean, that's what my folks listened to, and it was on the radio. It was popular music.
Okay.
You could hear Johnny Horton, and you could hear Chubby Checker. And
sure.
They were all in the same stations. And then as a kid, you know, I played Beatles and Rolling Stones and all that stuff. But it just came back to it through no fault of mine. Yeah.
So were you playing in rock bands and stuff in L.A., and did you meet, and now that would have been, was that like during the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band days with Vince?
I moved there in 78, and the first gig I got was with Lowell George. He was in that band, Little Feet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I started that band.
Yeah.
And now we were on the road for just a short tour before Lowell passed away, and that was a quick ending to that. And then I met Vince shortly after that. And after that, I mostly played country bars.
Okay.
In LA. That's all I did, just play the Woodland Bowl, you know, bowling alleys and bars. And
they had enough country bars in L.A. to keep
you
busy?
There were a ton of country bars out there.
Well, that, because in 78, that was during Urban Cowboy time, wasn't it?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's when that was all the rage.
It was all the rage for a while.
The hats with the big feathers. Remember those, the straw hats with the big feathers on them?
I missed that.
$1,000 boots and, you know, $300
hats. Yeah. Who doesn't have those? Sure.
Wow. Oh, man.
Well, as a touring guy, I mean, we're a keyboard player. There's been a lot of technological changes over the years for keyboard players in particular, much more so than I think guitars or drums. I mean, you still play those the same way you always have, but how has it changed for you and how you approach a gig and touring and what you bring and how you do it all?
Well, I was playing somewhere on a real piano and trying to keep up with the guitar player. You know, it's mic'd, and you can hear it okay until the band starts playing it.
Yeah.
And I looked down, I thought, what's that? Is there something in the key? And there's, you know, I hit my finger on the key, and there's blood all over because I'm trying to play
so hard.
So that's helped. Now I just all I got to do is reach over and turn the amp up.
Turn the amp up.
Plus, I can carry this in under one arm.
That's nice.
That's true.
So it's great.
I saw a show recently where they had a big grand piano on stage, but then afterwards it turns out the thing was a prop, and there was just really just
a synth
keyboard in where the keyboard goes, and the rest of it they just kind of folded up and took out.
No kidding. So you had blood on, that's like Pete Townsend right there, you know.
Wow.
Hey,
did you ever
all,
do the windmills
yeah.
on the piano? That's impressive.
It'd be hard to do. I could try. Accordion you could do it with, probably.
Oh, now we're talking.
Now that's rock and roll.
But in terms of what you do, it's all kind of being compacted. You don't have to carry around as much stuff.
I don't need a rack or anything. This keyboard has everything I need. It's got strings and all kinds of keyboards and a nice acoustic piano. It sounds almost real.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, you know, by the time the whole band's playing and everything.
Especially.
The
band's playing, it does.
I want to go back because we kind of glossed over when you first. So when you did first move to town, so at that point, were you and Vince already playing, or were you out doing some networking and trying to find some other gigs and writing partners?
He actually, Vince's wife Janice and her sister had the Sweethearts of the Rodeo. And they called me, and I'd played with them in little clubs and stuff around the Redondo Beach and stuff. And, they had gotten a record deal, and they called me to go on the road with them, so I came out and started working with them. Because Vince wasn't working very much. He wasn't touring at all back then.
Mm-hmm. What was the name of that bar right across from Swallows in San Juan?
The Coach House or something?
Yes, the Coach House. Yes. That was quite the
place. It's still there.
They just had a big...
I used to play that little bar. Was it the Swallows?
Swallows? Yeah, I played there.
Yeah.
I used to go see Steve Lukather from Toto had a little band.
Lukather? I just want to make sure you weren't lisping.
Yeah. He used to have a little band that played there. I think they were called Los Burritos or something like that.
Los Burritos.
Yeah. Oh, wow. At the Coach House.
Oh, Coach House.
Thank you.
It was cool. I digress.
So then you're working with Sweethearts and then just kind of gigging around with them and other folks too, or was it pretty much just...
Mostly them and then a few gigs with Vince now and then, and then... It just kind of flip-flopped, and he started getting busy, and I did stay in town, just tried to be an in-town guy for a while, and I kind of missed the road, and I wasn't working a lot, but, and then I just started writing songs.
And there you go. Just like that.
I didn't really move here to be a songwriter.
Simple as that, yeah.
Yeah, just all kind of, like everything for me, just, oh, okay, I'll go that way.
Okay.
You know, I didn't really plan anything out.
You just sort of followed the...
It all just happened. I'm a bad planner.
Yeah.
And when I try to plan, it never works, so I've just given up.
So you're saying you could end up back in dentistry school at any time. You might just say,
I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe I want to do that now.
Yeah.
But before
we get into the writing, what... Let's say a young piano player comes up to you in town and wants advice on how to break into the biz as a touring player. What should they be prepared for before they move to Nashville? Because, a lot of times they're used to being the big cheese. If they're a good keyboard player, they're kind of used to being the big cheese in their area, in their musical community.
Right, as everybody is when they come here.
Yeah,
Everybody's the big cheese in their little ecosystem.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know what I would tell.
Good.
Yeah. Right. Are you writing all this down?
I am writing this down. Nothing. Okay, good.
I would say if you want to be in the music business, you got to be either here or L.A. or New York. And this is the most friendly, I think, of all three of those places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to be one of those three places.
To be serious.
You can't do it long distance.
Right.
I wonder if it's easier in a place like here just because it's more compact. You know, L.A. is so spread out. There's much more difficult to network and meet people. And
yeah, it's a lot easier to meet people here.
Yeah.
I met more people in the more executives in one night at the Bluebird than I hadn't met in L.A. in 8 years. You know.
Really?
And they're just real approachable and accessible.
More so then than now, in as much you go to the Bluebird and you don't see those executives like you used to.
Well, you know, you can't, they can't get in anymore.
It's true.
You can't.
That's true.
It's all, they sell the tickets at 8 a.m. on Monday.
They're sold out by 8:03.
They are.
Yeah.
So, because we played at 6 o'clock thinking I'd get to see some of my pals and songwriting buddies, and they tried to come, they tried to get in, they couldn't.
Yeah.
And for the 6 o'clock show. So.
Oh, yeah.
And then they say, how many people is first time at the Bluebird? And
all
everybody.
Of them.
Everybody.
Everybody raises their hand.
Yeah.
It's still great, though. They're really a great crowd, no matter where they're from.
Absolutely.
Quiet. They listen.
Plus, strangers, you have a better chance of selling them a CD.
For more money.
Right.
For more money. One guy came up and said, you could have charged $20 to get in. You know, he liked the show. From New York.
What? No, it is $20. I mean, what did
you
they pay
as you leave?
Yeah, you pay as you leave.
Pay as you leave.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back with a whole lot more of hit songwriter Pete Wasner. We want to remind you, of course, that our sponsor of this segment is Toyota of Cool Springs. As many of you know, Scott and I are both Toyota drivers. We We love that dealership.
And why is that, Hino? We love it because they have excellent deals and they provide an excellent experience.
They do.
That's a lot of...
That's a lot of excellence.
That's
going
a lot
on right
of excellence.
There.
A lot of excellence. they have a lifetime warranty with unlimited time and miles on every new car, a 3-day exchange policy, and you know we've bought cars in several places. These
yep.
guys are just very, very low key, friendly, cool to hang out with.
That is absolutely true. Ask for George. He's the owner. He'll take great care of you. You can find him on the web at toyotaofcoolsprings.com.
That's right. We're going to be right back with much more of Pete Wozner here on the Music Row Show. Stick around.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with hit songwriter Pete Wozner, and that's a tune of his called Blue County Line.
Wow. I like that. That is a nice Eaglesy groove to it.
It does. We got some business to take care of, don't we?
We do. It turns out that Caitlin is looking out the window, looking
right
through the window
there.
Right now, and it's her birthday.
Well, happy and birthday, Caitlin.
How old did you say you were? 18 years old.
Wow.
Well, happy birthday, Caitlin. We'd sing, but we'd lose all of our listeners, but happy birthday.
Yeah.
There
Which
she goes.
Means you guys. That's pretty much what we got
yeah.
right there. Right.
We're here with Pete Wozner, and we had a listener message
yeah,
in, right?
Yeah, listener
on
Scott,
the, on the computer
no relation
thing.
To you, just messaged it on Facebook and was asking about Mama Knows the Highway, loves that song and wants to hear a story about it.
That's the first song I wrote when I moved to Nashville.
Get out.
Charles John Quarto wrote the lyrics, and I was living at Doris Tillis's guest house, and Pam Tillis had her piano in the little guest house, and I wrote it on that piano.
So you kind of had an in with the artist. I mean, that didn't hurt, right?
It didn't hurt. She didn't cut it, though.
No, she didn't cut it. That was it Hal Ketchum?
Hal Ketchum.
Oh, I get them confused. Pam Tillis, Hal Ketchum.
Well, no. Who doesn't?
They look so alike.
Wow, I know. remember when you asked how long we've been doing this?
Yeah,
it's
about 2 weeks
miracle,
now.
Isn't it? It's a miracle.
Did that song come out of a particular story, or were you just kind of...
It's just something Charles made up, and then I hadn't lived here very long, so I took it back to L.A., and we made a little demo. And I'd been taking my, back when they still had cassettes, you know, you'd
right.
take your cassette, or, and it was like $1.10, you know, for each cassette, and I'd give them to people. So I was doing a session with Alan Reynolds.
Oh.
And I gave him a copy of the cassette, you know, and thinking, well, there's another $1.10.
Great.
And I no sooner got home, like a half hour later, and he'd already called me back. He was the only guy that ever called me back and liked it. And we've been pals ever since. I ended up being with his publishing company for 11 years.
Wow.
Forerunner Music, and it was really great.
Wow. Well, let's since we're talking about that, let's see if we're getting any piano here. I'm hearing it.
Mama knows the highway by the song. When she hears a good one, she always sings along. She don't never worry about what's gone. She says, good country music will never steer you wrong. She talks to the truckers with the light. Maybe just a little bit more on Saturday night. She knows a good road to paradise. And that's just enough to keep the highway bright. Well, Mama knows the highway now by heart. She can see the rain before it starts. Looking clear through. Windshield full of stars. Mama knows the highway now by heart. She can tell Wyoming by the wind. She can tell another trucker by the rig that he's in. She knows how to wash the river bend. She knows where the real South begins. Well, Mama knows the highway now by heart. She can see the rain before it starts, looking clear through a windshield full of stars. Mama knows the highway now by heart. She can gauge a cafe just by looking at the sign. Little old places always share the grand design. Well, Mama knows the highway now by heart. She can see the rain before it starts, looking clear through a windshield full of stars. Mama knows the highway now by heart. Mama knows the highway now by heart. Mama knows the highway.
Yeah.
Oh, you're too kind.
No, that was great.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Wow. Very nice.
So,
well, there you go, Listener Scott.
The Listener Scott, that's for you. And let me ask you this, because you've been on the road with musicians now for well over, well, for quite a while.
All my adult life.
Yeah, let's just say that. Let me turn that down again. What is it you love about that lifestyle, and what would surprise people about it? Because I know maybe they're thinking it's super glamorous. And, talk about that.
You know, it's just like going to work now for me. I just get on the bus, and most of the time I have an idea of where we're going, but not exactly where. Uh-huh. I wouldn't call it glamorous anymore. It's just, you know, you eat a lot of bad food and travel for hours at a time, and you get paid really for riding the bus, and then you get to the gig, and that's the fun part, the 2 hours when you do the show.
Right.
But I don't know, it's not like rock and roll and groupies and drugs and all that stuff, or it's just the crew used to call our bus the Milk and Ho-Ho bus. that's how exciting we are.
Well, there you go. Well, actually, a listener.
Damn, we're out of Twinkies.
Milk and Ho-Ho bus.
That's perfect.
That's fantastic.
Well, listener Edwin writes in, wants to know if you still play with Vince when he tours, and if you guys have collaborated on any new songs lately.
I've been playing with Vince. He just has been doing other things, so I haven't done many gigs this last 6 or 8 months with mm-hmm. him. We haven't written anything we wrote some stuff on his last record.
The Guitar Slinger record, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think he's working on another one now. But okay. We've written a lot of songs over the years, though, together.
Sweet. Let me ask you, is it more fun to tour? Okay, so there's that period when you're touring with Vince and he's going all over the world, probably at breakneck speed because he's the hottest thing on radio for several years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it more fun to tour during that peak of an artist's career or later? I mean, do you maybe have a little more time to enjoy things later?
Yeah, you know, yeah, it was kind of a blur back then. You were
everybody's on a ho-ho.
We were working
high.
So much. That's right. You can get quite a good buzz on the ho-ho.
Yeah.
But not really until the milk kicks in then.
Right. Whoa, whoa.
Whoa.
Children, if you're listening.
Man, I need more 2%, man.
I'm on whole milk
myself. Oh, boy. Going for the hard stuff.
Yeah, a lot of it's a blur. We would play golf every day. And for a while, we were staying at a Holiday Inn, playing golf every day, and then coming back and doing the gig. So we'd wake up every morning about 7:30. We'd be in a Holiday Inn parking lot. Somebody would pick us up, take us to the golf course. After about a week, I'm on the golf course looking out, and I didn't know what state I was in. It was a beautiful golf course.
Yeah, it's green.
Yeah. So it was a blur.
So now do you guys actually get some time to maybe do a little looking around and stuff?
Oh, not really.
Okay.
Yeah.
You get to see the theater in the parking lot. You know?
Yeah.
It's pretty much, you know, whole day's taken up by you get there and then you go to soundcheck and eat and go and do the gig.
Yeah.
There's really not enough time to go and do anything and not be worried that you're not going to make it back in time, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's hardly ever any days off, and there's really, unless you're in New York or LA or somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, there's other cool places.
All right. Well, I've, you know, as you probably know this, but a lot of keyboard players tend to lean towards ballads in their writing. Hey, as a piano player in a guitar town, how do you how did you work to dispel that stereotype, or did you even try?
Oh, I didn't know. No, I haven't tried much. I
mean, because you've got some up-tempo. I mean, like what you just played, you know, that's not a ballad.
I like up-tempo stuff. I'm a frustrated guitar player. This thing I can make sound like an electric guitar in the track. I fooled several guitar players, but...
Really?
Well, yeah, just for a second. You know. It's like, who played drums on that when you pro? Oh, I did. I programmed them. You know.
Yeah,
but
that's funny. Well, talk about you mentioned a few times you've written quite a few songs with Vince, and how do you write? Or talk about writing for range, because I noticed, I was surprised when I looked on YouTube and found some videos of you singing that you kind of have a higher register too. You have that ability to get up there. Is that something you think about when you're writing, or you're thinking, well, boy, these people really can't even do that, or only Vince can do something like this?
I usually just, well, when I write with Vince, he just starts singing it, and nobody else can sing his songs, right. Really. They're so, I can't sing the ones we've written together, because the verse will be so low, and then the chorus is too high. So if I get the verse where I like it, then I can't sing the chorus because it's too high. He can sing higher than any human.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But I usually don't think of who I'm writing for. I just want to write a good song, and I figure if it's something I would do, I mean, I want to write something that I would do that I'm proud of, and hopefully somebody else will do it.
Okay.
We'll record it. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
I just didn't know if you were mindful of that. Is it, like you said, nobody can sing what Vince sings. So when you're just writing for regular, are you mindful of that, or as opposed to knowing you can do anything range-wise when you're writing something for?
I don't have that big a range, so I figure if I'm singing it, anybody should be able to sing it. It's not like I'm up there with Whitney Houston, or who was that one gal that sang the...
Celine Dion, or no, Mariah Carey.
Yeah, or she can sing like so high, it's almost like feedback. Minnie Riperton, she used to have that world's highest note, you know?
Yeah.
That was, I don't know how you do that with your voice.
I don't know.
So you don't do a lot of Minnie Riperton type of songs?
Not for a while.
Not a whole lot of runs, that kind of thing. So you not only have you played a lot on the road, but you've also played a lot in the studio, a lot of projects you've played on over the years. What stands out in your mind of the thousands of projects that you've played on?
Well, all the Vince records are really fun. That four-record set he did a few years back was
really
great fun. I think that's the best thing he's ever done. That really stands out. All the stuff I did with Alan Reynolds and, you know, Hal Ketchum, and that was really fun, too.
Well, good.
Good. Let's talk about, speaking of Alan Reynolds, One Night a Day, top 10 hit for Garth on the In Pieces album. And it was a bit of a departure for him, given it the jazz feel and the instrumentation. How surprised were you where that one ended up and you know, who ended up doing it?
I was real surprised. I mean, I had a couple of people say oh, that's a number one song, that's a big hit song, and I never thought of anybody doing it. I mean, we just wrote, Gary Burr and I wrote it, and and then they pitched it to Garth, and they said, Garth is walking around the studio humming that song and singing it. Really, you know? I think for a couple of years before he finally cut it. And nobody told me he was going to cut it. I think it was a last-minute thing, and I just walked in the studio one day and said, hey, come here and listen to your song. I'm like, what song are you talking about? And they played it for me, and it sounded great. It had a great sax solo by Jim Horn. And Garth learned how to play the sax solo.
Right.
Jim taught him, and he played it live.
He did.
So that's really impressive, because that's not an easy thing to just pick up.
No.
You know?
So then you heard it for the first time in the studio. What were your thoughts?
Well, I was thrilled. I mean, you know, it's just kind of, it was kind of surreal. You know, you don't really believe it's happening, kind mm-hmm. of. I don't know how to explain it. And then you hear it on the radio and go, that sounds just like my song. It is my song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Slap.
But just that it was so different
sure.
for Garth, you know, to even, it's a thrill to hear Garth doing your song, I can only imagine, with anything. But then you're going, with that one? Really? I mean, that's so not Garth.
Not many sax solos either.
country radio.
Yeah.
No.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true. Well, listen, we need to take another break, but we're going to come back with a whole lot more of hit songwriter Pete Wozner here on The Music Row Show.
Like a ghost town when she's gone.
Welcome back to The Music Row Show. We are here with hit songwriter Pete Wozner, and that's a tune of his called Ghost Town. Ghost Town. So during the break, we kind of got everything all set up here. We twisted Pete's arm, said, please play us another song. And he brought his lovely daughter in to help him out. She's over here.
Hello.
Mackenzie, hello.
Hello. Happy
Let's
to
see
be
you
here.
Turn your mic on. There you are.
There I am.
All right. So what do you guys feel like playing for us?
Let's do Wild as the Wind. You want to do that?
Sure. This is our duet version.
Ooh, good.
Mm. Very cool.
All right.
Garth recorded this on his live, one of his live CDs.
Garth who?
Oh, that guy.
That guy. Yeah.
Johnny grew up on the dark side of living in the shadows of the things he never saw. Rosie came round in the way that good luck does, just when you're looking elsewhere for what never was. Wild as the wind, wild as the wind is, wild as the wind is in love. Wild as the wind, wild as the wind is, wild as the wind is now.
So they teach
Wow.
Thank you.
So pretty.
Very nice.
So pretty.
Wow.
Do we take a break? We need
to
take a break.
Yeah, I think we all need to take a breath after that.
Yeah, beautiful. You're listening to the Music Row Show. We're here with Pete Wozner, and that was, of course, Mackenzie Wozner singing along. Stick around. We'll be right back on the Music Row Show.
Yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with hit songwriter Pete Wozner. That's a tune of his called Rodeo and Juliet. Love that title. That's awesome.
Thanks. Charles.
Charles.
Charles John Quarto.
All right. For that one. All right. Well, we're almost running out of time here. I'd love to. One of my favorite Vince Gill songs was Love Stop Slipping Away. Talk about Don't Let Our Love Start Slipping Away. That's the word.
Is
that's
that the one that's your favorite?
Yeah, the one that the title that I can't get out of my mouth. Talk about writing that one. That's a great song.
I hadn't seen Vince for a while, like because I wasn't on the road with him back then, and his first record had come out and done really well on MCA, and we had written a song that was the very first one we recorded for that record, and it didn't make the cut, you know. So I was talking to him, and it sold like a million copies or something. And he said something. He goes, "Yeah, I was kind of wishing we could have written more." And he goes, "Oh, we will." You know, and so he called me up one night, and we went over and wrote Slip in the basement, and it took no time. It just played itself, and he had some words, and we tweaked them, and it was too much fun, you know. It was too easy, almost. I almost felt guilty for a while. I got over it, though.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Well, I would say where can people find you online, but you're kind of an enigma online.
I have one place. It's the happening place I've heard. It's called MySpace. Have you all heard of that?
Oh, MySpace. What? Yeah.
Mackenzie's looking at me like, what's a MySpace?
I actually tried clicking on it, and my computer just went boom.
Yeah, my computer said no.
I have two songs on there if you go to MySpace/ Pete Wozner, if it's still working.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Really? Is it gone?
Well, I don't know. Let's talk. Does Mackenzie have a website? Okay.
She's on Facebook.
No MySpace?
No MySpace.
Oh, boy.
But I have two songs if you can get out, because Larry Carlton, this one's worth hearing the guitar solo. Larry's guitar solo.
Okay. So everybody sign back into MySpace.
Facebook.
Rejoin MySpace so you can hear this guitar
it's
solo.
It's the latest thing. That's what they told me.
Well, speaking of Mackenzie, and by the way, she did a fantastic job singing just before we went to break. She's out there performing and writing nowadays. Is it weird to be watching the process all over again as the industry has completely changed?
Oh, it's fun, you know, because I just do it for the music anyway, and everything else is just kind of gravy, and I don't even understand how it works. You know, I've just been lucky getting my music in the right place at the right time, so the music hasn't changed, you know. It's still
right,
still the same. So the business having changed is it was always a mystery to me anyway.
It never affected you one way or the
other. I never knew what it was. So
that's funny.
You just get checks every now and then and go, "What's
sweet?
I'm gonna go play piano again."
Wow. So I'm just curious how it feels to have your name always be the last one in the credits. I mean, do you ever think about changing your name or only writing with people whose name starts with a Z, or how does that work?
No, I like being the last one. Okay. That's fine with me.
Because they save the best writer last. That's
exactly
how that works.
That's it.
I see.
That's it. Well, this has been fun. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been great.
And it's been a pleasure just kind of corresponding with you back and forth the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
I felt like I had a good feeling of who you were, and I was right. You're a great guy. I'm glad you came in.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
And we're playing out. We have a gig coming up, right?
Oh, where at?
27th, Puckett's, Leapers 4.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Keith Stiegel. Sorry, Keith. And Mackenzie and I and Ronnie Fugé. And then the 20th, we're playing at the Bluebird. Craig Crothers and myself.
Oh, sweet.
And Mackenzie will probably sing a couple songs.
Most nice.
Excellent.
Craig's awesome.
You don't get any of the money, though. It's just for me.
Yeah.
It's a benefit.
Those Bluebird shows are all, that's where the big bucks
that's
come
That's where the
from
money's money. Made in this town, I
But is
you.
That for the Alive Hospice?
No, we did one of those about a month or so ago.
Okay.
We try to do that every year. That's really a good cause.
Well, it's been fun. I know we're going to see you around. We're going to see you at some of these festivals, I'm sure.
Great. I'd like to do some of those.
That would be awesome. Festivals.
All right.
That would be fun.
Well, listen, we got another great hour of the show coming up. We got Grammy Award winner Carl Jackson's going to be joining us here in just a second.
You know, so my favorite song of yours, Pete, is that one with that the one love and the...
With the guy.
And then...
And the
and this... Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
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 Come on back to the show, music.
The inevitable... Inevitable.
Yeah, we'll be back on the Music Row Show. Strong heart.